Hi, Dog Talk.
Hi, how you doing?
Who's this?
Barry Seltzer.
Hey, Barry, hold on, okay?
Yeah, for sure.
Be right with you.
Take your time.
All the work that you do at this shelter and on behalf of shelter animals, and especially helping us to know who these individual animals are so that when somebody comes to the shelter or looks at your website or looks at my website or hears me on the air, they go, oh, I'd like that kind of kitty, or that dog sounds like a good match for my other dog. And that's another thing that you can do there, which is great, which is you have this wonderful fenced, big grassy yard. So if you already have a dog and you want to add another, they can be introduced safely in that yard, first on leash and then off leash. And you can know, is this going to be a match made in heaven or made in hell, right?
Definitely, we do. Matter of fact, when I left, right before I made this phone call, I was at the shelter, and they were there a little bit after 6 because they were doing a dog interaction, and it was going very well, and so
nice.
The trainers were taking the extra time to stay late because, you know, it looked like it was going to be a go, which is so important because in this economy, you know, people are turning in their animals, you know, because of horrible situations, so we'd love to see them leave to, you know, walk out the door with a new family. And
definitely. And there's nothing better for your existing cat or dog if they don't have a like species critter living with them than to have a buddy. It really, it lessens your guilt when you leave them home alone, and it really gives them a connection to the pack or the clowder that they'd like to be in. So if you have one, please think of adding another, and you don't have to worry if they'll get along, because if you go to the Southampton shelter, the trainers and the environment will help you figure it out. So, Dr. Terry, you're doing a great job. Please tell everyone at the shelter that we hope it's a great holiday season with lots of people coming there to get their pets and not buying them. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Tracy, and we appreciate all your help that you're giving us.
It's a great pleasure. Everybody, please try and get yourself a senior pet before November is over. Thanks again, Dr. Terry.
So much. Have a happy holiday.
And you. Take care. I want to tell you before we go to my next guest, who's a lawyer who's going to help us protect our pets from the law and from human relatives who might inherit something when we go, that Waruva is the cat food that this show is most loving of. It's made in a human food facility and has really good ingredients. People who've used all kinds of even premium cat foods open a can of Waruva and they say, now this is what we're talking about. It's not a mystery pate. It's not scary ground up bones with skin and feathers clinging to them made to look like meat. When it says chicken breast, it is the breast of a chicken who lived free, not in a cage, and has been given no added chemicals of any kind. I don't think you're going to find any other cat food saying that. Cats who need to make the transition from dry food to wet food, because you know what I say about kitty crack, it's addictive and it's harmful. Cats are obligate carnivores who should eat meat only. And Waruva feels the same way. That's why they don't make any kitty crack. And I say kitty crack because all dry food is for cats is sprayed with substances which will both attract a cat to something unnatural and unhealthy for them and then get them literally hooked on it. A lot of people trying to transition their cats back to what they should be eating, which is a meat-based diet, find a lot of pushback from some serious addicts. So Waruva is there to help you with the rehab. You can learn more about maintaining your own cat's health with the quality protein they put in cans, which are, by the way, BPA-free cans, at Waruva, Webster, Rudy, Vanessa, waruva.com. You'll find it anywhere. There's premium pet food. Pet Food Direct gives my listeners a 15% discount. Go to my website, thecatbible.com, to find the code. I don't know what it is. And also Waruva makes Solistic for Petco and another nice food called Best Feline Friend, sold at premium pet stores. So those are places you can go to find those. I cannot wait to talk to Barry. Your book has me so nervous, Barry. Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs.
I don't want
How to
be nervous.
How to leave some of your estate to your pet. This is a great book, but listen, guys, you're going to read this book because you have not stopped to think, and Barry has covered every single angle. He's an estate planner lawyer. What happens to your dog or your cat when you die? Have you figured out who to give it to? What's going to happen? Leona Helmsley leaves all of her money to that little Maltese, and the courts threw it out. Like, please, you got to be kidding. If she had had this book, Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs, that dog could have inherited as much as she wanted to inherit. Barry, what inspired you to write this book? It really makes me nervous because it makes me realize we're all in so much jeopardy. What happens if we are suddenly hospitalized, even not even dead? What plans have we made for our animals? You could have some family member a lot of people do go, well, I'll just take it to the pound. They'll find a nice home for it. And then, of course, you know, they could euthanize it.
Absolutely.
So what inspired you? It's so thorough. It's a really sensational book.
That's really kind of you to say that. You know what? We believe that when someone brings a pet home, they're making a lifetime commitment, and they humanize us, and we have obligations and responsibilities not only to each other but to our pets. And we wanted to provide an opportunity for people to plan, to implement a plan for their pets and their families, and in that regard, try and give them as much information and opportunity to look at the different choices at different levels as to what they could do or choose to do. Doing nothing's really not an option.
That's right. It's so true. Your book makes it so clear. Setting up trust for the pet, caregivers, how do you choose a permanent caregiver? I mean, you give a great outline of that. We all say, I'm sure Aunt Mary will take it. Well, meanwhile, you give this great list. Okay, does Aunt Mary like animals? Does she live someplace that accepts them? Is she allergic? How's her health? How are her finances? You bring up a point that I never thought of. If you somehow chose by the Barry Seltzer rules from Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs how to have a permanent caregiver, and that person gets any kind of, I don't know if you mean just like welfare, but even Social Security, I'm not sure, then leaving a trust that's worth some amount of money could put them in financial jeopardy. Is that right?
Very much so. And also, depending on the nature of the trust, if it's revocable or irrevocable, it could have an impact on them in terms of income tax. So you have to really sit down with your professional advisors and look at a plan and see what the impact is, not only in terms of your pet, but in terms of the person who's settling the trust, if you're going to go that route, and also the beneficiary, the person who's going to be the caregiver and get the funds. And how you structure it is important. You have to also decide if you want that caregiver to be paid. And
right.
Do you want to defray health care costs? Do you want to incur, an expense in the trust or the funds that you're leaving to cover off the opportunity to, find a way to deal with your pet on the termination of its life? You know, there are a lot of things to look at and a lot of expenses involved, the same that there would be if you were dealing with a child.
Well, I guess that's partly what makes me nervous reading it. I don't think a lot of people have thought about all these things, even about their two-legged children, much less their four-legged ones. There's a lot of issues. I mean, a lot of issues like how much can you dictate to the person who becomes the caregiver or the guardian? How much can you dictate in terms of how you want the pet to be housed, how you want them to eat, what kind of lifestyle you want to impose on them, and then the cost of it. I mean, you have one of the facts that's bandied around that I couldn't disagree with more, but it's picked from the newspaper, that the average cost or something of keeping a pet is $187 a year. I think I spend that a month on food.
I mean,
it just
very,
depends
very...
on the individual.
Sure.
Where do they spend money for their pets, and how do they want that to be continued? It's very tricky. I mean, people just kind of assume that a family member or a good friend will take an animal, but they don't even say so in their own will. I mean, I'm sure a lot of animals wind up at the pound being put to sleep because nobody even knew what the plan was, right?
Very much so. In fact, what will happen will be exactly that. People have this belief that somebody's going to step in and do something. In fact, I had one file where the woman called us on a Friday night. She was unfortunately a shut-in and challenged and really didn't have any family members. She had no children, no husband, nobody. But she did have three cats that she loved very much, and she wanted to provide for them. I agreed to go see her on a Saturday morning. Sadly, on Friday night, after she called me, she passed away.
No kidding.
So her timing was abysmal and sad.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, she got lucky, because, and so did the cats, because two neighbors ended up taking two of them, and then they found a third person to take the third cat. But had that not occurred, they certainly would have ended up in the pound, and of course, as you say,
they put to sleep immediately. We just had Dr. Perry on saying there's no waiting period for most cats in most shelters.
No,
too
I don't
cats,
think, yeah.
That's it, they go.
Yep.
So, it's, and the idea that people need to sit down and talk about this is for sure true, because I had a friend, she's still a friend, a pediatrician in California who would go to Nicaragua once a year, like a Doctors Without Borders kind of thing, and she had, and you go into also horses and exotic animals, she had a parrot that, of course, bit everyone as parrots will do. She had three dogs, and one of them was a Doberman with three legs, Deja, and she had a Dobermanish quality about her. I mean, I liked the dog, but you knew you had to be cautious and be careful, like with some Rottweilers, when you're in their house, you do have to respect their space. I mean, she took her job seriously. And the woman said, oh, I'm leaving for Nicaragua tomorrow. I know no one else will take her. Will you take Deja if something happens to me? Now, this woman was a young woman, but horrible things happen to Doctors Without Borders in these places. And I said yes, and I thought, oh, my God, what am I saying? I don't know.
It's a big obligation. Yeah.
Doberman Pinscher, and it was a really awkward thing. I said yes, and all I wanted was for her to come home safely as quickly as possible, selfishly, you know, as well as wanting her to. You know, what would I have done? I didn't really have any legal standing, and who knows what the cost and the care of such a dog would be. And I might have moved her someplace that wouldn't let you have a Doberman Pinscher, maybe, right?
And the challenges involved. I mean, there are a lot of animals, and, you know, that's unfortunately when they're looked at initially, they may be blind, they may be challenged, they may have behavioral problems. And you can't just say, okay, Uncle Joe, you know, I'm sending Rocky to you. You got to sit down and talk to Uncle Joe.
That's right.
You know, you got to have a
that's
real
right.
plan. And Uncle
and
Joe may move.
Is, the book is fabulous, Bray, because it gives you the conversation to have with Uncle Joe. Because I think most of us do not think through the several, at least what you could count on the fingers of both hands, issues that really need to be discussed. How do you feel about this and what about that? And, you know, leaving money in trust, you don't have to be rich to leave money in trust, but you have to figure out how does the trust work. You know, you say sit down with a lawyer, but I think you got to have this book in your hand. Most regular lawyers don't know these things.
More and more are starting to. I think that you'll find that, firstly, most of the law schools now have sections that deal with animal law. It's
really?
Growing very much so. It's becoming more, and quite frankly, if somebody out there is thinking about doing a plan and they approach their accountant and their lawyer and they scoff at them, I would find a new accountant and a new lawyer, because really, it's their property. You have to help them implement a plan for not only their family, but all their property and including their companion animals. And if you're not willing to do that, really, you shouldn't be doing the work for them.
And with compassion, because this is a very fraught issue. I mean, I know people who are depressed or very sick that say, I would commit suicide, except for that I can't because I've got animals. So you think, oh, good, I hope the animals stay alive so that you stay alive. But they understand that if they were to kill themselves, they leave their animals in a horrible, horrible position. And, of course, that's more dramatic than someone dying by accident like that lady or by some horrible disease. But it's something that is pretty weighty in terms of
it is.
What are you leaving behind? You know, you're leaving behind animals that have a very rich life that they've had with you, and I'm sure that most people would like that to continue and don't stop to think there's a lot that goes into making that possible.
And also prior to the will being read and prior to a document being found, there are a period of time where you go out and you get in your car and you get in an accident. You know,
that's
and sadly
right.
You don't return and your dog is there, or your rabbits are there, or your parrot or your koi fish or whatever companion animal you have in your life, and no one knows about it. And no one knows the animal is present and the animal passes
Ooh.
Away because nobody is there to rescue the animal.
And you have this really good card that people should have in their wallet.
Not only that, I think it's important for you to inform people, like, and also choosing caregivers and choosing people to take, over, even if it's temporary care, between the period of time that, you pass away or you get sick, and if you never recover, and the time that your will is read. You need to actually involve people, and you need to think, you know, who would I call, and how do I choose somebody, and should I interview them, and should I determine what their life situation is like, and what would happen if they take on the animal and then they end up passing away.
That's
you need
right.
alternate caregivers.
That's
so
right.
It's really a complicated approach to planning in a sense, but yet it's so simple if you do it. And if you implement it before it's needed, after the fact, it's too late. You know, and that was the reason, really, the driving force, because depending on what statistic you read and what poll you read, half of all the people listening don't even have a will in place. They have no plan, not only for
wow.
their pets, but for themselves. And there are a lot of pets, you know, I mean, the statistics, you know, depending on where you read, there's 77.5 million dogs, you know, and currently about 93.6 million cats. And that doesn't include saltwater fish, freshwater fish, lizards, snakes, exotic animals, you
wow.
name it. And you named a parrot. A parrot could live 100 years.
Well, father got himself a new parrot when he was 83, and now he's 93. It's like, great, someone else has to. And what about my mini donkeys? They live to 40 years. I mean, I haven't really provided for them properly, I've sort of provided for them, but I've always had a will since the time I was 20, when I had, you know, 3 shekels to leave behind, because my mother died with a disorganized will when I was just a young girl with my sister, and that is not a nice thing to do, to leave a mess and a muddle, because the people you care the most about or the animals you care the most about are not going to get what you would hope, because that's just not what happens. The people all around find their ways of eating up chunks of this. It's a very awkward conversation to have, and I think this book, Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs, I keep repeating it because I want everyone to get a copy, which you can find a link right on my website to the Amazon place to get it. I think that people need to look at this and realize, wow, there's a lot of things to consider, and it's just thoughtless, and you're not going to rest peacefully in your grave if you don't sort of think of these things ahead of time, the animals that are short-lived or long-lived. A thing you point out that never crossed my mind, between the time you die and a will is dealt with, there could be months. Then who's doing what during the months, right?
Or years, or a will cannot be found. I mean, the truth is, you know, and those are the time periods, and there are a whole series of them, you know, and during those periods, if you haven't implemented something, what you end up doing is you end up putting your pets at risk. And there's no reason for that.
Also, another thing, Barry, you wind up putting the people you've left behind in a horrible position. The person who absolutely would love the animals for some crazy reason, the one who couldn't bear to have them, the sisters and brothers and uncles and whomever going, I don't want it, I don't want it, or maybe 3 of them do want it. I mean, you got to be clear, because otherwise the people left behind are in a terrible pickle. They don't know what to do or how to do it. And let's say money is needed, and you didn't allocate it for the pets. For some people, they would take on your pet, but they don't have the 10 grand it's going to take for the next 5 years, you know, for medical problems and other stuff. I mean, you put people in a horrible position, too.
And there are easy ways to measure the amount of money, really. There's, you know, formulaic approaches that you can establish, you know, the number of years that your animal will live, the cost of food per year, the routine vet bills and checkups, you know, special medical care if there is any, special needs, those types of things. Compensation, if, as you say, you know, it takes a lot of time. I mean, you know, for some older people, they may have pets already, and now they're adding to the family, and it's going to, you know, add to the time that they're involved in driving your pet or doing things. Do you want to compensate them?
Exactly. And it's not a tacky thing to do. It's respectful. It's a great book, Barry. We're running out of time, but it's a wonderful book. It's really something people should have in their hand. And you know what? These are important things to think about in many ways. And if you are a human without a will for your human people that you're leaving behind, you're doing them a disservice too. So you've done a great service to all of us. Barry Seltzer has written this terrific book, Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs, How to Leave Some of Your Estate to Your Pet. Thank you so very much. I look forward to looking at it more carefully and going back to my own lawyer and filling in the blanks.
Thank you very much.
You take care.
And you, Tracy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I just want to let you know that Dog Talk is also brought to you by Platinum Performance.